Welcome to the first ever Monsters Among Us. Thank you for tuning in. I am so happy you're here. I'm Kate Moser, and each week we will explore the question, are monsters real? Today's monster is known by many names, the Kindly Killer, the Munswell Hill Murderer, and the British Jeffrey Dahmer. Get comfy, because here we go. Warning, this episode contains discussions of child abuse, dismemberment, and necrophilia. So if that isn't for you, time to hit the stop button. Dennis Andrew Nilsson was born on November 23, 1945, in Fraser'sburg, Scotland, a small fishing town on the northeast coast. Dennis was the middle child of Olav Magnus Molsheim and Elizabeth Duthie White. They later changed their last name to Nilsson. He had an older brother, Olav Jr., that Dennis was always envious of, and a younger sister, Sylvia, whom he said he had the closest relationship with during his childhood. Olav was a Norwegian soldier, and the family moved to Scotland in preparation for the invasion of the Nazis. By all accounts, Dennis had a fairly normal childhood. There was no indications that any abuse occurred. However, his parents' relationship was a rocky one. Dad was gone most of the time with the military, and when he was home, he was really distant. When Dennis was only at the age of 3, Elizabeth decided that she wanted a divorce, and she moved herself and the kids in with her parents, Andrew and Lily White. Dennis's grandparents were heavily involved in the children's lives, and Dennis recalls that he loved them very much. Andrew would take Dennis for walks along the beach, and Dennis had said that this was his fondest memory of his childhood. Andrew was a fisherman by trade, but known as a great hero and protector by his grandchildren. In 1951, Andrew's health started to decline. However, he continued to work. On October 31st, 1951, Andrew suffered a heart attack and died at sea. This is the moment that everything changed for Dennis. Dennis's family wasn't very religious, and the death of his grandfather really confused him. When he went to the funeral, he was forced by his mom to view the body, and he was told basically that his grandfather was sleeping and that he had gone to a better place. Dennis, being only 6 at the time, really didn't understand the true meaning of death, and this is when his fascination with death had really begun. In the years following the death of his grandfather, Nilsson became more quiet and withdrawn, often standing alone at the harbor watching the herring boats. His mother had remarried and had 4 more children. Dennis did not like his stepfather and really got no attention from his mother, probably because she was busy chasing around all these kids. He never participated in family activities and retreated from any attempts by his family members who tried to show him affection. He spent most of his time by himself and really didn't have any friends. Dennis grew to resent what he saw as an unfair amount of attention his mother and his grandmother displayed to his older brother and younger sister, and really felt like he didn't get any attention, but that might be because he was pushing his family members away when they tried. Dennis envied Olaf Jr.'s popularity and really was not close with him at all. He was, however, close with his younger sister, Sylvia, and says that he used to play games with her and was closer to her than any other family member. Since he had no friends and spent most of his time alone, he would go for long walks by himself. On one of his solo excursions to the beach in 1945 or 1955, I wasn't quite sure on the date, Nilsson became submerged underneath the water and was almost dragged out to sea. He initially panicked and was shouting and gasping for air, obviously because he was drowning. And he recalled believing that his grandfather was about to arrive and pull him out, and then felt this sense of tranquility. However, his life was saved by another youth who dragged him out on shore. And this brush with death further enticed his curiosity with death. He wanted to see what it was like to die. He wanted to see what happened to a body as the life drained from someone's eyes. So he found a cat, logical for killers to turn to cats. So he found a cat. He took it, strangled it with a wire, and hung it up in a tree. When later talking about this experience, he said it didn't excite him. He did it purely to see what would happen and to see life being lost. Based on what he does in the future, I find it very hard to believe that he did not get excited about this experience. So right now, we see a young boy with no father figure in his life who lost the only man that he looked up to. He is resenting any affection from his family and starting to act out his death obsession with animals. And then puberty hit. Dennis realized that he was gay, and this was illegal in Scotland in the 1950s. And if anyone knew that you were gay, they would basically shun you from society. So this is something that Dennis felt very ashamed of, and he would continue to feel shame about his homosexuality into his adulthood. He kept his sexuality hidden from his friends and his family because he did not want them to find out that he was gay. Because many of the boys he was attracted to had facial features similar to those of his younger sister, he thought maybe that his attraction towards these boys was a manifestation of the love that he felt for her. But he didn't express this in the best way possible. He would occasionally fondle her and basically abuse her. Dennis made no effort to have any sort of sexual contact with any of his peers who he was attracted to. Although later he did say that he fondled an older youth and didn't find the experience unpleasant. At night, sometimes he would sneak into his older brother's room and fondle his brother's body as he was sleeping. As a result of this, Olaf Jr. began to suspect that his brother was gay and regularly belittled him in public, referring to him as Dennis the Hen. Dennis grew to further hate his family and shame himself for his sexual desires. At the age of 18, he then decided that he was going to enlist in the British Army. Dennis was very smart, and he passed his entrance examinations with flying colors. He decided he wanted to be a chef and was officially notified of a 9-year enlistment in September of 1961. He really loved his new life. He was able to travel and experience life beyond the fishing village he grew up in. He was first stationed in Germany, and he recalled this as his best time of his life. He was making friends and traveling and seeing the world, but kept his sexuality hidden. He never showered in public in fear of getting aroused. Instead, he would shower alone so he would pleasure himself in privacy. Although Dennis was making friends, he still felt very shy, so he started drinking on a daily basis, and this drinking continued until his eventual arrest. His circle became known as the hardworking boozy lot. Around this time, Dennis became drinking buddies with a younger, smaller German boy. On many occasions, he would pass out on the floor of the youth's flat, and this fueled his sexual fantasies. He really got excited about unconscious men or dead men. He would even pretend to be passed out in hopes that someone would take advantage of him. When this ploy didn't work, he propped a mirror next to his bed, and he would remain really still while looking in this mirror and pretend that he was looking at an unconscious man. He would then pleasure himself to the thought. Some nights, he would even paint his face white to mimic a lifeless body. Super weird. During his time in the army, he was stationed in various places and witnessed many traumatic deaths, which I think he enjoyed. Nearly at the end of his time in the military, he became very fond of a younger private. He would spend most of his free time with him, and they would often film short movies together. Dennis was very interested in filmography, and he even took classes on it. In these short scenes that they would do, the boy most often would pretend to be dead, and Dennis would use these for masturbation material later on. Dennis became obsessed with this boy, but the feelings were not reciprocated. When the private found out that Dennis was sexually fantasizing about him, he attempted to strangle Dennis, but due to his small stature, he was unsuccessful. In October of 1972, Dennis ended his 11-year military career and moved back home. There's conflicting reports of whether he decided to leave on his own or they just didn't renew his contract due to him being like very dirty and not having very good hygiene. He moved home, but that stay at home didn't last long. Only 3 months later, in December of 1972, he left for London to pursue a police job. Many sources state that he left so quickly after his voice of approval for gay rights to his brother and his brother's wife. In turn, his brother Olaf told their mother that Dennis was gay, and this was the last known time that Dennis ever spoke to his family. In April of 1973, Dennis completed his constable training in London and started a job as a junior constable. He really liked his job. He liked arresting people. He liked patrolling, but he missed the camaraderie of the army. He began to drink alone in the evenings every evening. And during the summer and autumn of 1973, he began to frequent gay pubs and engaged in several casual affairs with men that he picked up in these pubs. In his words, he viewed these encounters as soul destroying, which only lend him his partner, his body, and in a vain search for inner peace as he sought a lasting relationship. So basically these affairs were just a way for him to be sexually gratified, but he was really seeking a long-term relationship with somebody. In August of 1973, his birth father died and left him with £1,000, which at the time, I guess, was pretty good. And following a failed relationship that Dennis was trying to have, he came to the conclusion that his personal lifestyle and his job just didn't mesh very well, and he decided to quit the police force. Between 1973 and 1974, he served as a security guard, but the work was on and off, and he wanted something more stable. He got a job as a civil servant, finding jobs for unskilled laborers. He was still drinking daily, and attendance for his job was mediocre at best. However, he always volunteered for overtime and was soon promoted to executive officer. Dennis would hold this job until his future arrest, even though he did switch buildings midway through this job. In 1975, Dennis lived at 80 Tinghamith Road in Cricklewood District of North London. This flat was really close to a lot of the gay bars that he had visited. And one night he met a 20-year-old man named David Gellichen. David was a gay, homeless man living in hostels. They spent one night together, and the next morning, they decided to move in together. Several days later, the pair viewed a vacant ground floor flat at 195 Melrose Avenue, also in Cricklewood, and they decided to move on to the property. The flat was larger, it was on the ground floor, and it had room in the backyard. The couple had will eventually get a dog together, and that dog had room in the backyard. Soon into the relationship, Dennis found himself the breadwinner of the pair, and David showed no interest in getting a job. The relationship became more platonic than romantic, and the pair rarely engaged in intercourse. Within a year of moving into their Melrose Avenue, the superficial relationship between the two men began to show signs of strain. They slept in separate beds and both began to bring home casual sexual partners. The relationship went downhill from there and it ended in 1977. Dennis kept the dog and his partner moved out. Nelson formed brief relationships with several other men over the following 18 months, but none of those relationships lasted more than a few weeks, and none of these men's express any sort of intention with living with Nelson on a permanent basis. By the late 1978, Nelson was living a solitary existence. He had experienced at least three failed relationships within the previous 18 months, and he later confessed to having developed an increasing conviction that he was unfit to live with. Throughout 1978, he devoted a ton of time to work and a ton of effort to work during the day, and then most evenings he spent drinking and listening to music. Dennis was back to the isolated boy he was in his childhood and longed for companionship. If someone wasn't willingly going to give him companionship, he was going to take it. Over the next 5 years, Dennis killed at least 12 men and attempted to kill at least two others. All of Dennis's victims were young males that he met at the pubs near his residence. He would lure them to his flat with a promise of alcohol or a place to stay for the night. He would then strangle them to the point of death or unconsciousness. If the strangulation didn't kill them, then he would take them to the bathtub and drown them. If this isn't bad enough, he would then keep the bodies under the floorboards of his flat so that he could take them out and perform sexual acts with them, preferring to masturbate over their bodies. Yuck. I'm not going to go into detail on the victims because, frankly, it makes me sick to my stomach. But if you're curious, you can look them up. Within the first year, he had six victims' bodies under the floorboards. The flat smelled and had a fly infestation. I mean, obviously. It got to the point where Dennis had no more room and couldn't cover up the stench of the decomposing bodies. So he decided to get rid of them. He took them out over to the overgrown backyard in the middle of the night and lit them on fire. To cover the smell of burning flesh, he put an old tire on the flames, and it worked. He was able to get rid of the bodies without anyone noticing, and now he had room for new victims. Five more victims would be taken by the hands of Dennis and stored under his floorboards. However, a problem arose in 1981. His landlord wanted to renovate the building. Dennis basically refused to leave because probably he had a bunch of dead bodies everywhere. But after a 1,000-pound payout and time to dispose of the bodies, Dennis finally agreed to leave and moved to 23 Cranley Gardens. This move would not end his killing, even though he was now on the top floor of a multi-level flat and had no access to a secluded backyard. He had to get creative, or dumb in this case. Over the next year, he killed three more men. He followed the same rituals as he did in Melrose: strangulation, bathing of the body, sexual acts, and dismemberment. He stored the various parts in plastic bags around the flat. Of course, it started to smell, and the other tenants in the building started to get suspicious. This is when Dennis had the brilliant idea to start boiling the body parts and flushing the human soup down the toilet. This eventually led to the sewer becoming clogged and to Dennis's demise. When the plumber was called, human remains were found blocking the sewer drain in the alley, and the police immediately were notified and began questioning the tenants. They didn't have to look far because as soon as they entered Dennis's flat, the smell was repulsive. He put up no fight and showed the police where the remaining body parts were hidden throughout the rooms of his flat. Under English law, the police have 48 hours to charge him or release him. So they collected up as many body parts from around the flat as they could and sent it to the coroner's office. Fingerprint matches from the body parts of Dennis's last victim were a match to a missing person that had been reported. And at 5:40 p.m. on February 11th, Dennis was charged with murder. Police interviewed Nelson on 16 separate occasions over the following days in interviews which totaled over 30 hours. During the interviews, Dennis detailed his crimes, and he was adamant that he was uncertain as to why he had killed, simply saying, "I was hoping you will tell me that," when asked for a motive. He was adamant the decision to kill was not made until moments before the act of murder. He explained that most victims had died by strangulation. However, on several occasions, he had drowned the victims once they had been strangled into unconsciousness. Once the victim had been killed, he typically bathed the victim's body, shaved hair, any hair from the torso to, I guess, conform to what his physical ideal would be. He then applied makeup to any obvious blemishes on the skin. The body was then usually dressed in socks and underpants, and he would have conversations with the bodies. With most victims, he masturbated as he stood alongside or knelt above them, and he confessed to occasionally using the victim's thighs to masturbate himself, but repeatedly stressed to investigators that he had never actually penetrated his victims. He explained that his victims were too perfect and beautiful for the pathetic ritual of commonplace sex. So all of the victims' personal possessions were destroyed following the ritual for bathing their bodies in an effort to basically get rid of their identity as to what they were prior to the murder. And then they became what Dennis called a prop in his fantasies. In several instances, he talked to the victims' bodies as it remained seated in a chair or laying on his bed, and recalled being emotional as he marveled at the beauty of their bodies. When questioned as to whether he had any remorse for his crimes, Dennis replied, "I wish I could stop, but I couldn't. I had no other thrill or happiness." He also emphasized that he took no pleasure in the act of killing, but worshipped the art and act of death. Nelson was brought to trial on October 24th, 1983, and charged with 6 counts of murder and 2 attempts of attempted murder. He was only charged with 6 counts of murder because they were unable to find evidence for the other 7 victims. And the 2 attempted murder charges come from 2 men that he had lured back to his flat, but tried to strangle them, but they were able to get away, but didn't go to police at the time because they were engaging in gay relationships and didn't want anyone to find out. So he was tried and pled not guilty to all charges. During the trial, the defense tried to have the charges lowered to manslaughter, but were unsuccessful. On November 4th, 1983, the jury came back with a guilty verdict on the 6 counts of murder and 1 attempted murder, and an unanimous verdict of guilty to 1 of the attempted murder charges. Dennis was sentenced to life imprisonment with a recommendation that he serve 25 years. But in 1994, that was removed and was replaced with a whole life tariff to make sure that he never got out of prison. He accepted his punishment and lived his life out in prison. There was one case where he was stabbed by another inmate and had to really receive around 96 stitches for the case. But he got his due justice on May 12th, 2018. On May 12th, 2018, Dennis died in excruciating pain. He spent his final hours laying in his own filth as he suffered a ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm. His medical cause of death was given as a pulmonary embolism due to the ruptured aneurysm. Fitting punishment for this monster, I'll let you decide. Well, this case was a doozy, but I hope you enjoyed learning about Dennis Nelson. Stay safe, make good choices, and say no to going home with strangers after a night out.